Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this October 4th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, behind the mic. I am joined today by our great friend, Mr. Sheriff Sean Becker from the Wood County Sheriff's Department. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Oh, I had the wrong one on there. There we go. Sorry. Now we got you.
And I meant what I said. Always good to see you.
We also want to send a shout out to Taylor and our friends over at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Good to see you, sir. Always good to have you guys with us. Encourage you to go to YouTube, type into your search bar, Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, and subscribe to their page. Keep up to date on all the great things that they got going on over there. Sean, how have you been?
Great. My daughter had her birthday not that long ago, at the end of September, and so, Jordan, if you're going to be listening to this, happy belated birthday.
Love yeah. You.
She had a surprise trip down to New Orleans. Her her in-laws and her husband kind of tricked her for the last 2 months saying, you know, we're taking you somewhere, but we're not going to tell you until they got to the airport. So when they flew out of O'Hare in Chicago, she found out. So they spent a long weekend down there, and from the pictures I saw, when she said, she had a blast.
That's awesome to hear. That's very good to hear.
Yeah, so that's a personal thing going on. Happy B-Day, Jordan. Miss you, love you. And then my dad's coming in town this Friday.
Cool.
Picking him up at the airport. We're heading down to Madison to the Badger game. So we'll see our other daughter, Caitlin, and her husband, Dylan. So we're going to make a family event out of that. And hopefully the Badgers will pull one out against Rutgers. And then my nephew gets married a week from this Saturday, and they asked me to officiate the wedding. So that's going to be I've never done that before.
I was going to ask. Okay. All right.
So I got ordained online. So if you guys are somebody that wants to get married, I'll do it for free.
Right on. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
But no, that should be a great event, and I'm very honored that Gavin asked me. Gavin and his fiance asked me to marry them.
And a good friend asked me, and I got ordained 10 years ago or something like that. And it was a really cool experience. It's fun to be able to do. My daughter, my oldest daughter, Bria, she does this. She got ordained years ago, and she's done it like 6 or 7 weddings or something, and she does it because she loves being a part of people's special day. She just likes weddings, just likes doing it. It's a kind of a cool thing to be able to do. That's awesome. And it's such an honor to be asked to do something like that.
I'm gonna do it in uniform, and been going back and forth with emails about the whole ceremony, how it's gonna be. And it's like, all right, and so that's gonna come fast. So
very cool,
awesome family event coming up.
We had interesting, and it's just a lack of a better word, the incident this weekend here in Wisconsin Rapids after the Lincoln High School football game. I want to touch on that.
Yeah, well to bring the positive parts about it, Coach Buell, Tony Buell, and I are great friends, and I've been coaching with him for him the last 9 years. In the last few years, he's been doing a back-to-badge game. And this year was somewhat unique that we were going to play Marshfield. So we got in communication with the Marshfield coach, their school district, and wanted to kind of make it a little bit of a bigger deal since it's, you know, the in-county rivalry. And both teams are, you know, I felt equally matched, even though Lincoln High School's having a tough year this year. But so it came together really well, where we had, Marshfield Police Department, some of our deputies that live in the Marshfield area gave a police escort all the way from the school up in Marshfield at Marshfield Senior High all the way to the stadium here. So that kind of started the event. And then what we've been doing is, you know, escorting the kids from the school to the stadium. And we had great weather, so a really good crowd on both sides. I wasn't really happy with the results since we lost 6-0.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was a very competitive game, very evenly matched teams. It just unfortunately Lincoln fell on the short end on that
play
night.
Or two here or there could have went either way.
A couple things, but defensively we played really well, and our offense didn't do bad. I mean, they moved the ball, just couldn't score. But in the end, Marshfield went up on top. They'll hit the playoffs, and good luck to them. Transitioning to the incident that happened, a couple kids were kicked out of the game, and then just through probably rumors, third-hand rumors, things are being spread around that they're going to, or somebody was going to come up and shoot up the stadium. And the game had ended, and we still had a heavy law enforcement presence just because of the game. We had people from, like I said, many people from the Sheriff's Department, Wisconsin Rapids Police Department, and even Marshfield there because of the theme was back the badge.
Right.
So once that information was being shared, I'll tell you what, the school district administrators that were there did a phenomenal job of, you know, getting people out of there, getting areas locked down where students were. And then that gave us an opportunity to investigate what was happening. And SRO, the liaison officer for Wisconsin Rapids for Lincoln High School, Herman Olivares, did a phenomenal job, you know, getting the information to all law enforcement there, following up on it, and found out there was no threat. Mm-hmm. But they got through that rather quickly, so the lockdown didn't take very long. Once we got the information that, you know, we verified there was no continued threat, mm-hmm. and the investigation that he did along with Rapids PD was, you know, spot on. We got that information, you know, communicated right away, and then, you know, got everybody out of there. But, you know, just a reminder of, you know, those kind of situations that come up, and, you know, and how you practice and you talk about them and you prepare for them, and just that open communication that happened with the school district, you know, to law enforcement, and how we handled it. And, you know, thankfully, there is no issue.
Yeah.
But you have to take any type of threat, no matter where it comes, whether it's a third party, fourth party, you have to take it seriously. You do. And we did at many different levels and got through it. And then homecoming the next night, we provided some extra patrol, mm-hmm. just with the city, just to make sure that the dance and all the festivities went by with no issues, and there was none.
I got two comments on this one. One, how stupid do you got to be? Like, I'm sorry, I know I get in trouble with that word sometimes and with some of the things I say about this stuff, but I got to be direct, and I'm always honest with this audience. And it's never okay to do something like this.
Right.
And none of this is all right. But of all days to do it, of all the games to do it, you're going to do it on Back the Badge night? Really? Like, of all the... I'm sorry. I'm not going to get on a tangent on that one. I can't get past that. Of all the nights you're going to do it. Like, really?
By
really.
My smile, I'm going to tell you I agree with you. And we had, like I said, heavy law enforcement there. And it didn't hurt the theme of the day or the game either. The game was completed. Each team got to shake hands and, you know, talk a little bit. Some of the you know, kids got to meet up with, you know, their parents and friends, and then, you know, the information started to come out. And then I wouldn't say there's panic, but there's, you know, there's that, all right, we've got to do something. I'm like, okay, you know, because I was on the sidelines, you know. I wasn't mm-hmm. with all the law enforcement personnel, and then some people from, you know, the school administration came to me, and I'm like, what's going on? You know,
yeah,
it seems
yeah.
like we're kind of moving pretty quickly in certain areas. And then, you know, I connected with the law enforcement folks over by concessions and said, okay, hey, we've got this going on. And they had some people that were stopped that may or may not have been involved over by the old YMCA. Mm. But you had, like you just said, how many law enforcement officers on it like that right there?
With and that part of it, sorry to cut you off.
No,
just with that part of it, I know you and I are big believers in silver linings and looking at opportunities in life that, well, we didn't plan for this, but we can learn from this. So with that, and with so much law enforcement in the area, was there a bit of a training exercise almost with this, where you guys were able to kind of go through the moat and see how this guy went? Not that you knew what the threat was at the end. You didn't know how this was going to end. But as looking back at it now, looking at it, that a little bit of that as a silver lining almost.
No, I think that's a great point. If you look at, I wouldn't say a training part of it, it was just the response part of it, you know, and working together and, you know, going to where this alleged threat might be and getting there and dealing with it. And like I said, Herman just did a phenomenal job as a leader. You know, here you're working with three different agencies, all right, where do we go? You know, and the response was to where the threat was, you know, a couple blocks away, and you had, you know, as much law enforcement there as that was there, you know, and hey, if this is where the issue is going to be, you had that unified response right there. And then once you deal with the threat, which there wasn't one, you got these people stopped, and then the investigation parts, you know, starts from there. And that's where Herman really shined.
Yeah.
He just did a phenomenal job of, you know, dealing with these kids, you know, where is this information coming from and how many hands has it gone through? But the community should know that we take those seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, no matter where they're coming from, and we dealt with it and got through the situation. And I'm really proud that not only with Herman, but all of our response to it.
gives us an opportunity to bring up the program that in this state that the Wisconsin Department of Justice kicked off about a year or so ago, I think. Students, parents, school staff, or any community members can submit a school safety concern or threat via SUSO website, mobile phone application, or toll-free number by texting SUSO to 738-477. That's 738-477. Reports can be made 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or online at speakup.widoj.gov, and you can just type speak up into your search bar and find the website to go to. This is another way for us to kind of help you and law enforcement be able to assess threats.
Right. No, you got to love technology, you know, in these types of search, you know, situations where people can report an incident and either remain anonymous or just call 911. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the thing that I'm going to tell anybody. If you have a situation, you still can remain anonymous even by using 911 or Crime Stoppers. Mm-hmm. If you see something, especially something like this, you know, it got reported, and mm-hmm. that was the main thing, and we handled it appropriately. But you've got a lot of different avenues out there that you could, you know, text in your, you know, you can text into Crime Stoppers. You have a lot of opportunities to report a crime.
I know that you usually have a list of things you want to get to. What you got first on your docket there?
The first thing I want to talk about is, you know, we've mentioned it, you know, numerous times throughout the years, the CIT, mm-hmm. and how we've been, you know, holding that training, you know, that 40-hour training, you know, every year for local law enforcement or any law enforcement around the state. That's grown. I'm very proud to say that, you know, we took a look at our CIT program and how else can we better serve not only the, you know, the newer law enforcement mm-hmm. officers, but continue that training for, you know, the people that have got the experience and how we can connect them with this training. And now we've been doing advanced CIT training courses, and we had one yesterday, an 8-hour course that was working with people who live with addiction, you know, drug and alcohol addiction. And we've talked about that on our show, you know, so often, especially connecting it to the people that are in our jail. Yeah. And we'll get an opportunity to talk more about that. But when I went through the training yesterday, it was phenomenal how Doug Christensen, you know, our mental health deputy, and then Katie Siz, who has her own company now dealing with mental health but has a lot of experience with it, they coordinated the training program yesterday, and it had different levels of you know, addiction. You know, mm-hmm. it started off with having DCI come in and talk about what the current drug trends are. Mm. And we've been talking about them for quite a bit. You know, probably the biggest thing that we're seeing around here now, not just in central Wisconsin, but all over Wisconsin and the country, is meth. Mm. You know, meth has been coming up on the rise. And just to hear some of the background of the cost of it, you know, I'm not a drug investigator. I'm sure our drug investigators could talk a little bit more on it. But, you know, just to hear the cost of what meth would cost, you know, years ago is so much more than it is now, you know, where it's kind of been the country's been flooded with meth, and it's kind of, you know, going back to the cartels, not dating, but it's connecting to the cartels and how they influence the cost of meth and how that's really having an influence on our people, you know, and then how the drugs are, you know, cut with other substances, and mm-hmm. The obvious dangerous one that we talk about is fentanyl, where mm-hmm. somebody is, okay, I'm using meth, I'm addicted to meth, and you're buying it from whoever that person is, what are they cutting it with? And you don't expect that, you know, fentanyl's, you know, with that, and then all of a sudden you overdose. And that's happening with other drugs as well, you know. So that was, you know, hearing about, you know, that trend, you know, that is here, unfortunately, and that's probably the bigger drug that people are using right now. You know, heroin's still an issue, fentanyl's still an issue, don't get me wrong, but to hear that information coming from, you know, somebody from the state was interesting to me and educational to me, and I don't want to sound like I'm ignorant to our drug problems, but here you're having somebody that is, you know, has his hand on it on the state level. Mm-hmm. You know, locally, hey, we're working it just as much as anybody else is. Another thing that came up with that, just with part of it, is anabolic steroids. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that trend was on the uptick.
Yeah.
You know, being a coach and been doing it for a long time, that's a, you know, very you know, very supportive of physical fitness. Mm-hmm. I was just surprised to hear that, and the concern was with youth. People getting involved with using steroids to enhance their performance. I hope that's not happening. I'm not seeing where I'm at. I'm really not. But that's not to say that it isn't a problem, you know, somewhere along the lines locally. But just to hear that was, I wouldn't say interesting, but concerning.
Yeah.
That you've got, you know, kids, the younger kids that are into the fitness part of it, you know, looking to get steroids. And they're somewhat, unfortunately, fairly easy to get, which is unfortunate. Because there's a lot of effects with, if you're going to take steroids, and then you look at later in your life what that is going to do to your body.
When we were kids, a big thing in the 80s especially was just say no to drugs. Mm-hmm. But that was the end of the sentence. Just say no. They didn't tell us why we should say no. They didn't tell us any details about these drugs, just a generic effect of what they were, and that you stay away from them. They're bad. Bad people do them. You're not a bad, you don't want to be a bad person, so don't do them. Just say no. It was, I don't begrudge what they tried to do with that, or DARE, or MAD, or any of these programs, but we've seen the statistics. They did not do what we wanted them to do. Do you think going forward, the best approach, and I'm thinking of this with the two, when you started this conversation, these are not the drugs I thought you would be talking about. And it's not very often when you're talking about this subject that you can feel old, that something can make you feel old. But as a kid, where I grew up, the big problem was Coke being split with a baby powder or this kind of stuff and everything.
Right.
And I didn't realize how lost I am on this subject now. I don't know anything about meth. I don't know anything about steroids and any of these things. And I'm a grown man. If a kid, I would expect knows even less about this stuff. And if we inform them, I understand that there is a concern sometimes of a kid didn't even know what steroids were until I told him. Well, he would have found out eventually. It's a little like swearing. You're almost better off letting your kids know what these words are, not saying using them, obviously not using them, but knowing what this stuff is. Know your enemy. That's the one of the biggest things in war, in battle and war and anything else, is knowing your enemy. Every good general does that.
Yeah.
Should we be taking that approach with this subject more?
Well, I think with yesterday, that was, one of the takeaways that I had is the conversation we're having right now. Mm-hmm. I was just surprised to hear it, at a state level, that this is starting to become a concern.
Yeah, and I'm generally surprised too.
But this kind of took me in took some notes on it. And again, going back to, my second job that I love just as much as my first job, with the coaching aspect of it, and getting the opportunity to work out with a lot of the football players. And I just, maybe I'm oblivious to it, but I don't see it at all. And nor do I hear people talking about it either. Now, I'm not saying it's not there, but I just I don't see it. But to hear that, I think for us, especially for me personally, it's worth the conversation to have, with the rest of our coaching staff and kids, as we move forward with it. I mean, if it's out there, the effects should be known, and people should know it's illegal, and you're going to get yourself in some trouble if you get caught with it, just like any other drug. Going back to meth, another thing, where you're connecting with the cartels, and we've had some recent drug investigations that link directly to the cartels in Mexico and other countries, but primarily Mexico with meth. We used to have a lot of the labs that people would, make their own meth. And another thing, a takeaway that, the state investigator brought up is, they spent a lot of time training people, at many different law enforcement levels and first responder levels, because if you came across the meth lab, there's a big issue, with the safety of not only just the law enforcement people, but people around, where there have been situations where explosions have happened and people have lost their lives, whether they're a user or somebody that is, if you want to call them, a chemist, or first responders or law enforcement, that safety factor is out there. Well, with this current trend, with how meth is coming into our country, people are not doing their labs like they were. They're not making meth the way that they were before as often. Years ago, they were busting or coming across, through investigations, a couple meth labs, every month or even more, or weekly. Mm-hmm. Now it's one or two a year, and it's really going back to what the cost is of meth and how it's getting into our country.
And I think that this, as adults, we all feel like, well, this is stuff we should know. We need to be aware of these things so our kids can't get involved in this. Or if they are involved in something, we have an idea of what's going on or something. It feels just as important in 2023 and going forward that the kid knows about this stuff. Information's out there. They're a Google search away from finding out about any of these things anyway. Wouldn't you rather be the one telling them this than a search engine? I wonder. Because I'm not saying it's a clear line. It's gray. It's a gray area. You worry about, and that I worry about. I'm a parent, and I worry about. Yeah. But I do wonder if going forward, I don't know what good we do children or the youth if we try to hide things from them. Right. You know, they're grown. They may not be adults, but they can handle a lot more than I think us as adults realize. And if we remember when we were that young, we were able to handle a lot of things too. And I think going forward, that our power lies in information and leaning on each other with and sharing information in almost any field and anything we talk about in life going forward. Something like this, it seems too big and too important. And if we save one life, keep one person from being an addict, seems worth sharing the information.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why, yesterday was, so informative for me. And then we had quite a few of our deputies there, and we had officers from Madison PD, which was really, for me, that was telling us that we're on the right track of the train that we're doing. Because Madison and Dane County, they have their own, within their law enforcement agency, their own mental health unit. Law enforcement officers, and I think accompanied with social workers that are handling a lot of their mental health calls of service. So having that mix of people I didn't get an opportunity to really talk with a couple people that were from Madison Police Department, but I'm just curious at what their takeaway was. But for me, it was huge, starting off with the trends in the morning and then getting, a psychologist to come in, a doctor to come in and talk about the effects on the human body, mm-hmm. And why, like, meth is so addictive, that effect on the brain. Mm-hmm. And once, people that unfortunately try meth, within the first or second try of using it, they're hooked. Mm-hmm. Because you look at, like, the analogies that or comparisons they brought up, you eat, like, your favorite food, mm-hmm. And how that makes you feel, like chocolate. There was something else they brought up.
The endorphins they kick off,
and makes you feel good, or things you do, if like maybe you work out, mm-hmm. or something, and how that makes you feel. Now multiply that by like 100 or even more. Yeah. That's what this drug is doing to you, and now it's really fast. If you use it, you're hooked on it, and that's part of meth, and that was, and other drugs as well. Mm-hmm. But that came up, so you're learning about what those effects are on, on that person, and it kind of rolled into that. Then in the afternoon, Three Bridges came in, mm-hmm. and talked about, I'm very familiar with them, obviously, because mm-hmm. of our partnership with them, but, now you're seeing, their presentation and talking about the effects, mm-hmm. not just the physical effects, and now on the mental health side of things, those effects of what it has, and how, you talk about addiction, it's really not, it is an addiction, but it's more of a the way
chemical imbalance.
About how that person's brain is now operating.
Yeah.
And it kind of brought a lot of things together for me when you talk about the trends, you talk about the effects in the body with professionals. They're talking to law enforcement about it. Now you bring in probably the most impactful thing is with Three Bridges, and then having a panel of people that are struggling through addiction at all different levels of their life. More than 15 years, somebody's been sober, up to somebody a year. And then with Doug being there, and this one individual continuing to compliment Doug and what he's done just by going back in the jail. And as a law enforcement officer, showing that, hey, we believe in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You're going through a tough time. Mm-hmm. And then out of the eight people that came in, each one of them talked about their story. And they talked for probably 10, 15 minutes about what happened, how they became addicted to whatever, what was that first drug they started with, what was their life like at the time. And they're all different people. They all have their own individual, you know, I wouldn't say story, their life experience, and now what they're doing now and how they've, you know, worked through it to change their lives. Still struggling. Mm-hmm. The common, I wouldn't say theme, but the common, you know, situation that they all went through at this point in their life, they didn't slam law enforcement. Mm. In fact, you know, a lot of them said, thank you for being here. Mm. Number one, thank you for letting us be here and talk about it. And thank, you know, you as law enforcement officers for being here going through this training.
Right.
And then, you know, listening to, you know, what they said, a lot of them were in situations where, you know, we did it, they called it a drug raid on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could be really pissed off at law enforcement to come in, you know, and when we have our guns out, we're as protected as we can be, because mm-hmm. we've lost way too many law enforcement officers in situations like this, and that's why we bring a SWAT team in when we do, you know, a drug search warrant. That's part of the process. And they all seem to get that. Mm-hmm. And what was, I wouldn't say rewarding, but what was somewhat gratifying to hear people say, I caused this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was yep. me. You know, you came in and had to do your job, and I caused it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to hear that, and with my career, you know, being on the SWAT team, and now you're hearing, hey, okay, we did make a difference. You know, it sucked. You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
thankfully, in those situations, you cooperated. You did what you're told. We explain to you afterwards, we come in, you know, with the force that we do, because we all have to be safe. And then here's the, you know, situation afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then to hear them, you know, bring that up, and then to finally at that point in their life, whether or not they're arrested or not, really step up and say, it's time for me to be to get sober, to get the help that I need, because it's not just for me but for family or life or something like that. It was really impactful to hear, because I thought our training was going to be done early. It went later, because we got the opportunity not only to hear their story, but then ask questions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and ask hard questions.
Yeah.
A big one that came up from some officers, not that they were in Central Wisconsin, but harm reduction.
Mm.
Why should we have a needle exchange program somewhere? Why should we be carrying Narcan? You know, why should, you know, all these things on harm reduction? And to hear, and because a lot of people, and it's still out there, and I'll disagree with them because the more I've learned, but why would we want to have these things out there when people are choosing to do this to themselves and others? Well, if you have a needle exchange program somewhere, and I'm not saying law enforcement is going to do mm-hmm. it, but somewhere you are keeping people somewhat safe at the time. Well, they are because they're not sharing needles, they're not doing things. And when is that moment going to be when they're ready to be sober?
I think of this with condoms often. A teenager has never had to, like, oh, a condom. Now I'm thinking of sex. No, they were thinking of sex already. A condom did not ensure that they were going to do this or anything like that. All it did was make maybe think about being safe when they're doing it.
Yeah.
To the point of what we were talking about with the chemical imbalance with this. It's something that I've studied from my perspective my whole life growing up with my father. I don't think I've ever actually been able to do this before, and I've had the opportunity, but I'd like to take a second to thank the Wood County Sheriff's Department, the Wisconsin Rapids Police Department, for arresting my father, because I don't have him without it. I don't have him without it, just point blank, being blunt with the audience. I love my dad. He's one of my biggest influences, one of my best friends, and I wouldn't have had him last 20 years clean and sober if he didn't get busted. And he'd be the first one to tell you that he asked for it, that it's his fault that he got busted. And when the police, the sheriff's department, they're doing their job. But one of the things that is a crux about this situation that frustrates me a bit too, and I imagine you in some ways, is the person out there listening to this conversation with the pushback of, just don't do it. Just don't do it. Well, okay, that sounds great. I'm going to stop right now. And to that person, I'd like to say, you know, whatever you're trying to do in life, just do it. Just go ahead and do it, you know, quit. No. I don't want to hear any excuses. Just do it. Just get it done. Well, I can't because of this. I can't because of that. Well, it's the same thing with addiction.
Right.
You're not going to meet an addict who is doing this because they got nothing else to do.
Right. Right.
They go, you know, I thought it'd be fun to be a meth addict. I in high school, that's what I always wanted to be. That is not where this stuff goes. It starts with a chemical imbalance in the brain that you cannot control. And you need control. You need help to control that. Need help to figure that out. There are a lot of layers to this, but it starts with the brain, like most things do. And understanding that approach is part of what will help you. Not everybody, and hopefully nobody out there grew up like I did or had to see their, 7 years old, their dad with a needle in their arm. But I saw that, and you will never see me with that. I learned right in that moment that's not who I'm going to be. That's not who I want to be.
Yeah.
But we don't need those kind of lessons for kids. We need to have them informed about this subject and be able to make those decisions on their own and have that that individuality and the strength in themselves to be able to make those decisions. But when they do fall into these cracks in this part of society, we've got to be smart about how we approach this subject and get them off of it, and get through this. And the only way to truly do that is to break it down. It's not I know everybody would like a quick fix solution. We all would in life. That's right. Not this subject. This subject's layered. It's many layered. And it's right. going to take all of us as a society to get through it. Okay. And we went way too long on our segment here, way too long, but we couldn't help it. It's a good topic, good conversation.
And you know how passionate I am about CIT, and I'm very excited at the direction that we're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, with Doug and Katie and Nami and just the opportunities that we're doing. And this was impactful yesterday, and we're going to continue to offer the same course, and we're going to have more of our people continue to go to it. Next week, I'm going down to Madison, and they're doing a CIT course that deals with the elderly population, which has a strong connection with me personally. But it's like, okay, what's our next course that we're going to put on for advanced? And that's going to be most likely an elderly population that we'll deal with.
I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. Yeah. A good topic. We'll take a quick break, come back with more Sheriff Becker on Midday Magazine here at WFHR. Welcome back, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this October 4th, 2023. James J. behind the mic. We're speaking with our good friend, Sheriff Sean Becker from the Wood County Sheriff's Department. Sean, we've gotten into a really good couple of conversations today.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
Domestic Awareness Month. The month of October is. So we had a good opportunity to talk with the new director at the Family Center this morning, Trisha Fancher. Great person. I've known her from a few years from the Hanna Center up in Marshfield. And she's very instrumental of getting a Hanna Center opened up here in Wisconsin Rapids. So sad to see her go from the Hanna Center, but we're still keeping her here, and she's overseeing now the Family Center, who's been part of especially domestic violence awareness for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going back in my career, starting here. I don't want to say when, but they were located on the west side in a house, and then just to see that grow into the facility they have now, and they're serving so many local families that are in a really tough situation and helping them through that. So it's great to see that Trisha took over for Sue. Hey, Sue.
Yeah.
Congrats on your retirement. Mm-hmm. You've always been an awesome partner with law enforcement, and I know that Trisha will do the same thing.
Yeah. We're going to have the Family Center on a couple of times with us this month talking about this subject, and being on the board even before I was on the board, it being one of my more passionate topics I will be touching on this throughout the month of October.
Good.
But when it comes to, from your perspective, what is something that you think that not everybody knows about domestic violence that we should be out there, should be known about it a little bit more? It's such a huge topic, and it's a big question to ask, but is there anything that comes to mind right at the top of your head when I say something like that?
Just the effect on everybody, that it has. You have a situation that's called in on a law enforcement perspective. The first thing is the officer safety, factors. That's always, a two-person call. You have people that are, highly emotional at the time. And, depending on if drugs or alcohol are on board, you have to question how rational they are when they're going to deal with law enforcement. But, when the call comes to our dispatch center for a domestic, violence situation, it's bad. We all know that it's bad, and the effect that it's having, not only the two people that are involved, but look at everybody else. Children. What are they witnessing? What are they seeing? Other family members, neighbors. friends. Somehow the situation got called into the sheriff's department that we now have to intervene. And the laws obviously are pretty strict on how we're going to handle it. If there is a probable cause that are, you know, that somebody committed a crime, they're going to jail. If they're the primary aggressor, they are going to jail. We have to do that. That's the way the situation is. But it's the situation for a reason like that, because so many people have been victimized, or even worse. You know, when I've been to some of the, you know, they have them every month during October where they remember all the victims
that
lost their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, and you go to those kind of ceremonies, mm-hmm. you know, or presentations, it really brings it back as far as the law enforcement side of things, how bad it's gotten to where you've seen people lose their lives. And that's why we're, as far as law enforcement, the situation, if we were called to it, we're going to take action, because we have to. We have to try to save, or we need to save some lives. So it's I look at it as the effect of, you know, not only just the two people, that the victim and the predominant aggressor that is going to go to jail, but then you look at, you know, everybody else that it connects with. And then that's where you lean on, you know, the professionals and the people that are out there, because it becomes about the victim now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first priority. Once you get the people that are involved separated, you focus on the victim, and that's where we're so lucky to have the Family Center there to partner with, to connect a victim with services. And then with the person that goes to jail, it doesn't end with them. You know, you still want to, all right, get the people separated, make sure the scene's safe, and then when that person is you know, in custody, you know, what can we do to help that person get through this situation so it never happens again? Mm-hmm. You know, just because somebody's in jail, that doesn't mean that we forget about them. I've always said it. Once that individual gets released from, you know, our jail, they're not an inmate anymore. What can we do to help them to make sure it doesn't happen again? Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's an anger, you know, management kind of situation, or however we can do to connect that individual with services, so when they return to society, that they don't victimize somebody else or that other person again. Because a lot of situations, you know, the person will go back to that relationship. And, you know, our goal is hopefully that they learn from this and it never ever happens again, and they move forward.
I wanted to make sure to get this right. We've been talking with the Family Center about this. The emphasis this year is everyone knows someone, even in our town. It's part of the awareness that they are bringing to this subject this month. A lot of people are going purple for DV month, for Domestic Violence Month. If you see a lot of purple, that is part of the reason. I know in some other areas of the state, some people have done it with like their porch. They've gone all purple with that. In our community, on October 21st is Awareness Day, and the community members will wear purple that day to share their share photos on Family Center's Facebook page, which we encourage you to like and keep up with. The awareness of effort will accumulate with the Family Center's annual vigil set for 6 to 7 Thursday, October 28th. And that'll be again at the Family Center at 525th Street North in Wisconsin Rapids. The public is encouraged to attend this free event. And to show where you stand on this subject.
Right. Yep.
I think going forward, it's more and more important every day to show where you stand on certain issues, on certain things. How do you want to? Society, history is going to judge us on certain stuff.
Right.
And when it comes to this, is one of the bigger subjects to me. There's no gray area with this one. It's black or white. You're either with us or you're not. And it's nice to see a community like ours that so much embraces this. It's so behind this. Even people that I wouldn't expect always to be supportive of this topic, very supportive of it.
Yeah.
And it's encouraging.
Yeah, you need to be. Not a mind.
Where do you want to go next?
The jail. We'll keep talking about that until the project's done. We are hopefully this month, a year from now, the facility will be completed. And then we'll have probably 60 to 90 days of just, you know, training our staff, just to get used to the new facility, mm-hmm. doing a lot of dry runs to making sure that everything's working. And then hopefully occupy probably a year from January.
Wow.
And no more contracts with other facilities, and we'll have a much safer environment, you know, for our staff and then inmates. And yeah, so it's you know, people probably get sick of me talking about it, but it's just something that I'm very proud to be a part of, you know, and I'm just a small part of it, you know, personally, but, you know, professionally, just the teamwork, the team aspect of it from just from the community, county board, everybody. It's just been a really highlight of my career just to be part of it. You know, because when you're led to believe something and you realize, wait a minute, no, we've got to do something and, you know, we're going to get there, you know, and a year will go by really fast. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
It goes the other way, too, when history looks at us and judges us on things. Something like this, they're going to look back on it and be like, oh, they got it done. They got it done. They didn't kick the can. That generation got it done. That generation made that happen. Yeah. Like, that's something on the positive side of these things where we can go. Since you guys know the design of the building and everything, and I'm going to show that I know nothing about your job almost. When it comes to that part of it, knowing some of the dynamics, the logistics of it, are you guys able to not maybe do any training, but talk about these scenarios and different things about the jail? You're still going to have to do the 2 weeks of training and these things, but being able to prep maybe a little bit, for lack of a better word?
We're doing that now. We have a transition team that Captain Ashbeck has put together, and he's doing a phenomenal job with that, where, you know, all the policies have to change, you know, and then once the policies are changed, which he's been doing, they have to get out to our team, and then the state has to approve them. So, I mean, he's been doing, and it's not just one or two policies. It's like, you know, hundreds, because the facilities are so different. So he's been doing a great job with that, and with you know, our leadership team back in the jail, just being on the transition team. You know, a big thing, and this is a great thing to kind of segue into, is we're having an issue, just like every other county is, with their jails, staffing it with corrections officers. And we've been doing a good job of staying full staffed. You know, we'll have our ups and downs where some county jails are down, you know, 8 to 10 people that they need to hire. And in some places are having to ship inmates out to other facilities because they don't have staff to watch them. We're not there. You know, we have some openings now, so if anybody's interested, let us know. But a big thing our county board did again, we had a situation come up when the state budget passed. Part of that, the state corrections officers, the prison guards, got a huge pay raise. They're around $21 an hour to start, and that's really close to what we're at, and which most county jails are. Well, they went up to $33 an hour. How do you compete with that? So we sat down as a leadership team and said, what can we do? I mean, we can't still compete with that, but if with our folks being at this pay rate, we got to do something. You know, we looked at, all right, what would be fair, you know, to at least start people at, and how do you take care of your current staff? So we figured that out, you know, starting everybody not at $21 an hour, but $26. And then the people that have more than 4 years experience go into different steps. And then our leadership team, you know, got, you know, a higher hourly rate as well. I mean, is it at $33 an hour? No, it's not. But we went through, our public safety committee, I have to really, you know, commend Joe Zerflew Sr., who oversees our public safety committee as a chair, the co-chair, Bill Voigt. Both had law enforcement experience, you know, and really once we started talking about the concern we had, because I didn't want to see, or we didn't want to see us losing a bunch of our corrections officer jumping ship to the state and putting us in a bind, which is happening in other counties. So once we got that ball rolling and those discussions going in and getting to where, you know, at least those, where's that new starting wage is going to be at, you know, and that comes down to the teamwork again with, you know, our human resources, our corp counsel, our finance people coming together and then getting that information as a package to our county board. They did it solid again. They passed it, you know, and that says a lot to me about our county board. Yeah, we did the research and made sure, hey, this is what we need to do, but it shows they care. They care about the employees. They care about the facility that we're building and that we need to staff it and move forward. So I, again, have to thank our county board for, you know, pushing that through. I know there's always a cost to it, but there's also a cost to doing business as well. And we're on the right track. So we still have a couple openings. So if people are interested in the corrections field, give us a call. Susanna Pearson, one of our lieutenants in the jail, really oversees our hiring process there and does a fantastic job. When people apply, we're interviewing them within, you know, 2 to 3 weeks and trying to get them in. And the partnership with Mid-State Technical College is huge too. You know, with Kurt Hoyer being over there, being the director of the law enforcement, the correction sides of the academies is what a phenomenal pick. Number one, you know, Kurt's one of my mentors. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked for him, I worked with him. He's just doing a fantastic job there. We're going to have a corrections academy graduate a week from this Friday, and he reached out, and I'm honored I get to speak at it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and we've got three people that are graduating from that next week, so congrats to them and their willingness to be part of this profession. But again, to highlight, you know, not only just the staff, but our county board again for pushing this through to give our corrections officers the wages they deserve.
Just to piggyback on that, big shout out to the construction and the workers on this project. Everything I can tell, on schedule, doing a great job. Yeah. Also working in the city very well, and haven't heard any incidents with that or anything. It's been really nice to have this huge, you have a very good call. Having this big project going on and that all happening at the same time, that is pretty great.
Yeah, the Samuels Group out of Wausau, really happy the county went with them. They're, mm-hmm. they're local.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that they've put in charge of this huge project have been phenomenal to work with. And I don't envy them because you have so many different contractors coming in for different parts of the project. But the project itself will be enclosed sometime this month. We'll have all the windows on, so it'll be a different kind of work going on now. The exterior will be pretty much done. And now it really boils down to getting the interior done. So it's kind of exciting part of the project. I love giving tours, you know, just to brag about it.
Yeah.
You know, just so if anybody wants one, just let me know.
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely want a tour of that. Yeah, right on. I'll definitely do that. That'll be great. Let me do some journalism. That'll be good. That'll be good.
Yeah.
We got about 5 minutes left. Yeah. I wanted to wrap up with Run the Cops, one of our favorite events in this area, and I know one that means a lot to you and your team.
Yeah, that's tomorrow. I'll run with the cops here in Wisconsin Rapids. Tomorrow night, downtown Rapids, come on down. The benefit is that partnership we have with Special Olympics. So come on down. We'll have a bunch of squad cars on display. Some of us will try and run. I won't, but... But it's been a great event. Weather looks pretty good. It's an excellent fundraiser for Special Olympics. And that partnership has been there forever. And hey, Cole, buddy, I'll see you tomorrow night.
We send a huge shout out to Special Olympics. Some of my favorite people I will ever work with are at Special Olympics. Mm-hmm. Wonderful human beings.
Yeah.
When it comes to the event, should the city, people that are not participating in it, should they, things they should keep an eye out? I understand that the path is lit. There are things like that to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, a lot of it is really off the street besides, you know, closer to downtown where the start is, but then it peels off to the walking bike path along the river. Goes up to the Fireman's Memorial and comes back. So you're not really crossing many streets that are busy.
Yeah.
And part of one of the initial street they close off anyway. So great event that Wisconsin Rapids, all the local law enforcement agencies take part of, but we're looking forward to that. And then another one coming up is the Fall Community Bike Ride that Hannah Wendels from UW Extension has put on. I'll be doing that with Chief Peterson next week on October 11th. So if you're bored and you want to bike with Mel and I, you're more than welcome to.
She's great. We talk with our extension friends all the time, and it's one of my favorite events. I love Run with the Cops. It's a great event, especially the Special Olympics connection. You can find out more at SpecialOlympicsWisconsin.org. This one feels so grassroots, feels so specific to our area and to the specific teams that we have here with our community and law enforcement. It's a fun event, and every year I hear from people how much they enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, like I said, for the sponsorship. The River Riders Bike Share. Mm-hmm. Hannah's overseen that, but she does an awesome job. Go back a few years with her. She used to play soccer with our youngest daughter, Caitlin.
Oh, cool.
So it's really cool to see her back here and doing something in the community that has an impact, you know, to help people out.
We always appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time because you and I had like 2 hours worth of stuff.
Puts people asleep, I guess. I don't know.
Always appreciate the time. Yeah. Sean, stay safe out there. Thank you. Say hi to your team for us, and we'll talk again next month.
Sounds like a plan.
Big thank you to Taylor and all of our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media as well. Be sure to bookmark their webpage on YouTube and keep up with all the good things that they are doing. We'll have more Midday Magazine for you right here tomorrow on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.